What a monumental waste of effort and salaries. Our underground cities were supposed to be impregnable, and we grew lax in our security. Just like these men here. He clapped Jodam on the back. The pock-faced veteran frowned and went back to his work. The big bald man sighed once more. At least my children got away. His face screwed up in an expression of disgust. Damn the filthy Tlaloxer and damn House Carino! He spat on the ground, startling Leet. Respect given only to an honored few. But Dominic Vernius had used it as a curse. Strange ways, Leet thought. The bald man looked at the two young freemen. My main base off-planet probably suffers from similar flaws, too. He leaned closer. Should either of you ever wish to come with me, you could inspect our other facilities. We make regular runs to Seleucia Secundus. Leet perked up. Seleucia? He recalled his father's stories of growing up there. I've heard it is a fascinating world. From where he worked off to one side, Jodam let out a disbelieving laugh. Like the capital of the Imperium anymore. Asuyo shook his head in agreement. Dominic shrugged. I am the leader of a renegade house, and I vowed to strike against the Imperium. Seleucia Secundus seemed a good place to hide. Who would think to look for me on a prison planet, under the Emperor's closest security? Pardet Kynes had spoken of the terrible Seleucian disaster caused by the rebellion of an unnamed noble family. They had gone renegade and unleashed forbidden atomics on the capital planet. A few members of House Carino survived, including Hasek III, who had rebuilt the dynasty and restored imperial government on a new world, Kytane. Pardet Kynes had been less interested in history or politics than in the natural order of things, how the world had been changed from paradise to hell by the Holocaust. The planetologist claimed that with sufficient investment and hard work, Seleucia Secundus could be restored to its former climate and glory. Someday, perhaps, I would like to behold such an interesting place. A world that so affected my father. With a loud, booming laugh, Dominic pounded Leet on the back. It was a gesture of camaraderie, though freemen rarely touched each other except during knife fights. Pray you never have to, boy, the smuggler leader said. Pray you never have to. Water is the image of life. We came from water, adapted from its all-encompassing presence, and we continue to adapt. Imperial Planetologist Pardet Kynes. Out here, we freemen have none of your comforts, Lady Fenring, the shout-out Mape said as she scurried ahead on short legs. Her steps were so precise and careful that she did not even kick up dust on the moonlit hardpan. In contrast with the humid conservatory, the bone-dry night retained very little of the day's heat. You are cold? She glanced back at willowy, blonde-haired Margaret, who walked proudly in front of the rooty-eyed priest. Mapes wore her Jubba hood. Still-suit filters dangled beside her face, and her dark eyes reflected the light of second moon. I am not cold, Margaret said simply. Wearing only her glitter-slick house dress, she adjusted her metabolism to compensate. And those thin-soled slippers you wear, the priest scolded from behind her. Unsuited for desert travel. You did not give me time to dress for our journey. Like all reverend mothers, she maintained thick calluses on her feet from the fighting exercises they were required to perform each day. If the shoes wear out, I will go barefoot. Both freemen smiled at her calm audacity. She does maintain a good pace, Mapes admitted. Not like other water-fat Imperials. I can go faster, Margaret offered, if you like. Taking this as a challenge, the shout-out Mapes trotted along at a military cadence, not breathing hard at all. Margaret followed every footstep, barely perspiring. A night bird streaked overhead with a piercing cry. The unpaved road led out of Arakeen toward the village of Rutii in the distance, nestled within knuckled foothills of the shield wall. Avoiding the town lights, Mapes turned onto a faint path that climbed into the rocky elevations. Rimwall West loomed before them, a craggy megalith that marked this boundary of the shield wall. The small party began to climb, at first over a gentle slope of rock, then up a steep, narrow path that skirted an immense slide area. The Freeman moved with speed and sure-footedness in the shadows. Despite her training in balance and endurance, Margaret tripped twice on the unfamiliar terrain and had to be steadied by the others. This seemed to please the guides. More than 2 hours had passed since leaving the comfort and safety of the residency at Arakeen. Margaret began to tap her bodily reserves, but still showed no sign of weakness. Did our lost sisters travel this way? Mapes and the priest spoke strange words in a language that Margaret's deep memories told her was Chakobsa, a tongue spoken by freemen for dozens of centuries, since their arrival on Arrakis. As she recognized one of the shout-out's phrases, Margaret responded, "The power of God is indeed great." Her remark agitated the priest, but his short-statured companion smiled wisely. "The Sayadina will speak with her." The path forked several times, and the Freeman woman led the way up, then down, or laterally in tight switchbacks, before ascending again. Margaret identified the same place in the frosty moonlight, and realized they were guiding her back and forth in an effort to confuse and disorient her. With her Bene Gesserit mental skills, Margaret would remember the way back in exact detail. Impatient and curious, she wanted to scold the Freeman for taking her on such an unnecessarily tedious route, but decided not to reveal her ability. After years of waiting, she was being led into their secret world, into a place where no outsiders were ever taken. Mother Superior Harishka would want her to observe every detail. Perhaps Margaret would finally acquire the information she had sought for so long. On a ledge, Mapes pressed her chest against the cliff and inched along a narrow path over a sheer drop-off, clinging with fingertips. Without hesitation, Margaret did the same. The lights of Arakeen twinkled in the distance, and the village of Rutii huddled far below. Several meters ahead now, Mapes suddenly disappeared into the rock face. Margaret discovered a small cave entrance, barely large enough for a person to enter. Inside, the space grew broader to the left, and in the dim light, she saw tool marks on the walls where Freeman had widened the cavern. The dense odors of unwashed bodies touched her nostrils. Ahead, the shout-out beckoned. When the priest caught up, Mapes unfastened a door seal and swung a camouflaged door inward. Now, unmuffled by seals and doors, voices could be heard, mixed with the hum of machinery and the rustle of many people. Glow globes tuned to dim yellow bobbed in the air currents. Mapes passed through a fabric-covered doorway into a room where women worked power looms, weaving long strands of hair and desert cotton into fabrics. The warm air held a heavy human musk and waftings of melange incense. All eyes watched the regal, blonde visitor. The weaving room opened into another chamber, where a man tended a metal pot suspended over a cooking fire.
Firelight danced on the Shadout's wrinkled face and imparted a fearful look to her deep blue eyes. Margaret observed everything, storing details for her later report. She had never imagined the Freeman could hide such a population, such a settlement. Finally, they emerged into a larger, dirt-floored chamber filled with desert plants, sectioned off by paths. She recognized saguaro, wild alfalfa, creosote, and poverty grasses. An entire botanical testing ground. "Wait here, Lady Fenring." Mapes strode ahead, accompanied by the priest. Alone, Margaret bent to examine the cacti, saw glossy ears, firm flesh, pale new growth. Somewhere in another cacti, what sound, she looked up to see an ancient woman in a black robe, standing by herself on one of the garden pathways, arms folded over her chest. The strange woman was withered and wiry, as tough as shiga wire. She wore a necklace of sparkling metal rings, and her dark eyes looked like shadowed pits gouged into her face. Something about her demeanor, her presence, reminded Margaret of a Bene Gesserit. On Wallach 9, Mother Superior Harishka was approaching the two-century mark. But this woman looked even older, her body saturated with spice, her skin aged by climate more than years. Even her voice was dry. "I am Sayadina Ramalo. We are about to begin the ceremony of the seed. Join us. I know. Margaret stepped forward, ready to cite the secret code phrases to identify her awareness of the Missionaria Protectiva work. A woman named Ramalo had disappeared into the dunes a full century ago, the last of a series of reverend mothers to vanish. "No time for that now, child," the old woman interrupted her. "Everyone is waiting. With you among us, they are as curious as I am." Margaret followed the Sayadina into a vast cavern that thronged with thousands upon thousands of people. She had never imagined such a huge enclosure within the high rocks. How had they eluded detection from the constant Harkonnen patrols? This wasn't just a squalid settlement, but an entire hidden city. The Freeman had far more secrets and far greater plans than even Hasimir Fenring suspected. A wall of unpleasant scents assailed her. Crowded close, some of the Freemen wore dusty cloaks. Others were in stillsuits, open at the collars within the body-humid cave. Off to one side stood the priest who had brought her from Arakeen. "I'm certain they left no sign of our departure from the conservatory. If they mean to kill me now, no one will ever know what happened. Just like the other sisters." Then Margaret smiled to herself. "No, if I am harmed, Hasimir will find them. The Freemen might think their secrets were safe, but even they could be no match for her count, should he focus his efforts and intellect on tracking them down. The Freemen might doubt that, but Margaret did not." As the last of the desert people streamed into the cavern from several entrances, Ramalo took Margaret's hand in her sinewy grip. "Come with me." The withered Sayadina led the way up stone steps to a rock platform, where she faced the crowd. The cavern fell silent except for a rustle of clothes, like bat wings. With some trepidation, Margaret took a position beside the old woman. "I feel like a sacrifice." She used breathing exercises to calm herself. Wave upon wave of impenetrable Freeman eyes stared at her. "Shai Hulud watches over us," Ramalo said. "Let the water masters come forward." Four men made their way through the crowd. Each pair carried a small skin sack between them. They placed the sloshing containers at the feet of the Sayadina. "Is there seed?" Ramalo asked. There is seed, the men announced in unison. They turned and departed. Opening the top of one of the sacks, Romolo splashed liquid onto both hands. Blessed is the water and its seed. She brought her hands out, trickling blue fluid as if droplets were liquid sapphires. The words and the ceremony startled Margaret, for they resembled the Bene Gesserit poison ordeal through which a sister was transformed into a reverend mother. A few chemicals, all deadly poisons, could be used to induce the terrible agony and mental crisis upon a sister. Adapted from the missionary activity, Brotman? If so, what else did the desert people know about the sisterhood's plans? Romolo unfastened the sack's coiled spout and pointed its end toward Margaret. Showing no glimmer of doubt, Margaret dropped to her knees and took a tube in her hands, then hesitated. If you are truly a reverend mother, Romolo whispered, you do harm to yourself. I am a reverend mother, Margaret said. I have done this before. The freemen maintained their deep, reverent silence. You have never done this before, child, the old woman said. Shai Hulud will judge you. The sack reeked of familiar spice odor, but with an underlying bitterness. The acrid blue liquid seemed to roil with death. Though she had passed the agony to become a reverend mother, Margaret had nearly died in the process. But she could do it again. Beside her, the Sayyidina uncoiled the drinking tube on the second sack. She took a sip from the tube, and her eyes rolled back in her head. I must not fear, Margaret thought. Fear is the mind killer. In her mind, she recited the entire litany against fear, then sucked on the straw, drawing in just a drop, the barest bit of moisture, touching the tip of her tongue. It struck her with a shockingly vile taste, like a hammer all the way to the back of her skull. Poison! Her body recoiled, but she forced herself to concentrate on her own chemistry, altered a molecule here, added or subtracted a radical there. It required all of her skills. Margaret released the tube. Her consciousness floated, and time stopped its eternal cosmic progression. She let her body, her trained Bene Gesserit abilities, take over and begin to alter the chemistry of the deadly poison. Margaret understood what she had to do, breaking the chemical down into something useful, creating a catalyst that would transform the rest of the liquid in the sacks. The taste changed to sweetness in her mouth. Every action she had taken up to that point in her life lay spread like a tapestry for her to observe. Sister Margaret Rashino Zea, now Lady Margaret Fenring, examined herself in minute detail, every cell of her body, every nerve fiber, every thought she'd ever experienced. Deep in her core, Margaret found that terrible dark place she could never see, the place that fascinated and terrified all of her kind. Only the long-anticipated Kwisatz Haderach could look there. The Lisan al-Ghaib. I will survive this, she told herself. Margaret's head reverberated as if a gong had been struck inside it. She saw a distorted image of Sayyidina Romolo wavering in front of her. Then one of the watermasters came forward and pressed the tip of the tube into Margaret's mouth, collecting the drop of transformed liquid, which he then dipped into the contents of the sack. Beside her, the ancient woman released her grip on the second tube, and other watermasters spread the transformed poison from one container to another, like fire starters touching flaming brands to a field of dry grass. People thronged to the sacks to receive droplets of the catalyzed drug, brushing the moistness against their lips. Romolo said, somewhere in Margaret's consciousness, You have helped make it possible for them. strange. This was so different from anything in her experience. But not so different after all. Slowly, like a dreamer dancing inside her own consciousness, Margaret felt herself return to the stone-walled chamber, with the drug-induced vision only a flickering memory. Freeman continued to touch their fingers to the hanging droplets, tasting, moving to the side so that others could partake. Euphoria spread like dawnlight in the cavern.
"Yes, once I was a reverend mother," Romalo told her, at long last. "Many years ago I knew your mother superior."
Still fogged by reverberations of the powerful drug, Margaret couldn't even act shocked, and the old woman nodded.
"Sister Harishka and I were classmates long, long ago. I joined the Missionaria Protectiva and was sent here with 9 other reverend mothers. Many of our order had been lost before, absorbed into the Freeman tribes. Others simply died in the desert. I am the last. It is a harsh life on Dune, even for a trained Bene Gesserit. Even with melange, which we have come to understand and appreciate in new ways."
Margaret looked deeply into Romalo's eyes and saw understanding there.
"Your message spoke of the Lisan al-Ghaib," Romalo said, her voice quavering. "He is close, is he not? After these thousands of years..."
Margaret kept her voice low as the Freeman became wilder with the ecstasy of their ritual.
"We hope within 2 generations. These people have waited a long time."
The Sayyidina surveyed the euphoria in the room.
"I can reveal Bene Gesserit matters to you, child, but I have a dual allegiance. I am also a Freeman now, sworn to uphold the values of the desert tribes. Certain confidences cannot be revealed to any outworlder. One day I must choose a successor. One of the women here, no doubt."
Romalo bowed her head.
"The Siege Tau orgy is a merging point of Bene Gesserit and Freeman. Long before the Missionaria Protectiva arrived here, these people had discovered how to partake of the awareness spectrum narcotic in primitive, simple ways."
In the shadows of the great chamber, the Freeman moved apart, and together, fogged with the drug. Some raised to an inner peace and ecstasy. Some driven to members of the opposite sex in frenzied coupling. A sloppily painted canvas of reality settled over them, turning their harsh lives into a dream image.
"Over the centuries, sisters like myself guided them to follow new ceremonies, and we adapted the old Freeman ways to our own."
"You've accomplished a great deal here, Mother. Wallach 9 will be eager to learn of it." While the Freeman orgy continued, Margaret felt as if she were floating, numb and separate from it all. The ancient woman raised a claw-like hand in benediction to release her back into the outside world.
"Go and report to Harishka."
Romalo displayed a wispy smile.
"And give her this gift."
She removed a small bound book from a pocket of her robe. Opening the volume, Margaret read the title page. Manual of the Friendly Desert. Beneath that, in smaller letters, it read, "The Place Full of Life. Here are the Ayat and Burhan of Life. Believe, and Allat shall never burn you."
"This is like the Ajar book," Margaret exclaimed,
surprised to see an edition adapted to Freeman ways.
"Our book of great secrets." "Give my sacred copy to Harishka. It will please her."
Awed now by her presence, the Rutii priest took Margaret back to the residency at Arakeen. She arrived shortly before dawn, just as the sky began to pale into soft orange pastels, and slipped into her bed. No one in the household, other than the shout-out Mapes, knew she had ever gone. Excited, she lay awake for hours. Several days later, her head full of questions, Margaret climbed the trail back to the cave, following her crystal-clear memory map. In bright sunlight, she traversed the steep trail into Rimwall West, made her way across the narrow ledge to the opening of the siege. The heat slowed her. Slipping inside the cool cave shadows, she found that the door seal had been removed. She walked through the chambers, finding them empty. No machinery, no furnishings, no people, no proof. Only odors lingered. "So you don't entirely trust me after all, Sayadina," she said aloud. For a long while, Margaret remained in the cavern where the Tau orgy had taken place. She knelt where she had consumed the water of life, feeling the echoes of long habitation there. All gone now. The next day, Count Hasimir Fenring returned from his desert inspections with the Baron Harkonnen. At dinner, basking in her presence, he asked his lovely wife what she had done in his absence. "Oh, nothing, my love," she responded with a carefree toss of her honey-gold hair. She brushed her lips across his cheek in a tender kiss. "I just tended my garden." I stand in the sacred human presence. As I do now, so should you stand some day. I pray to your presence that this be so. Let the future remain uncertain, for that is the canvas to receive our desires. Thus the human condition faces its perpetual tabula rasa. We possess no more than this moment where we dedicate ourselves continuously to the sacred presence we share and create. Bene Gesserit Benediction. This is how we test humans, girl. Behind the barrier of her desk, Reverend Mother Gaius Helen Mohiam looked like a stranger, her face stony, her eyes black and merciless. "It is a death alternative challenge." Instantly tense, Jessica stood before the Proctor Superior. A skinny girl with long bronze hair, her face bore the seeds of genuine beauty that would soon flower. In back of her, the acolyte who had delivered the Reverend Mother's summons closed the heavy door. It locked with an ominous click. "What kind of test does she have in mind for me?" "Yes, Reverend Mother." Summoning all of her strength, Jessica kept her voice calm and still, envisioning a shallow pool of sound. With a recent promotion, Mohiam had acquired her additional title as Proctor Superior of the Mother School on Wallach 9. Mohiam had her own private office, with antique books sealed in a clear-plaz humidity case. On her wide desk sat three silver trays, each containing a geometric object, a green metal cube, a brilliant red pyramid, a golden sphere. Streaks of light shot from the surfaces of the objects, bouncing between them. For a long moment, Jessica stared at the hypnotic dance. "You must listen to me carefully, girl, to every word, every inflection, every nuance. Your very life depends on this." Jessica lowered her eyebrows. Her green-eyed gaze shifted to the older woman's tiny, bird-like eyes. Mohiam seemed nervous and fearful. But why? "What are those?" Jessica pointed at the unusual articles on the desk. "You're curious, are you?" Jessica nodded. "They are whatever you think they are." Mohiam's voice was as dry as a desert wind. Synchronized, the objects rotated, so that each one revealed a dark, dark hole in its surface. a hole that corresponded in shape with the object itself. Jessica focused on the red pyramid, with its triangle-shaped opening. The pyramid began to float toward her. Is this real or all illusion? Startled, she opened her eyes wide and stared, transfixed. The other two geometric shapes followed, until all three floated in front of Jessica's face. Brilliant beams darted and arced, spectral streaks of color that made barely audible snappings and flowings. Jessica's curiosity mingled with fear. Mohiam made her wait for many seconds, then said in an iron voice, "What is the first lesson? What have you been taught since you were a little girl?" "Humans must never submit to animals, of course." Jessica allowed a thread of anger and impatience to infiltrate her voice. Mohiam would know it was intentional. "After all you have trained in me, Proctor Superior, how can you suspect I am not human? When have I ever given you cause?" "Silence. People are not always humans." She came around the desk with the grace of a hunting cat and peered at Jessica through the sparkling light between the cube and the pyramid. The girl felt a nervous tickle in her throat, but didn't cough or speak. From experience with this instructor, Jessica knew something more was coming. And it did. "Ages ago, during the Butlerian Jihad, most people were merely organic automatons, following the commands of thinking machines. Beaten down, they never questioned, never resisted, never thought. They were people, but had lost the spark that made them human. Still, a core of their kind resisted. They fought back, refused to give up, and ultimately prevailed. They alone remembered what it was to be human. We must never forget the lessons of those perilous times." The Reverend Mother's robes rustled as she moved to one side, and suddenly her arm moved with an astonishing flash of speed, a blur of motion. Jessica saw a fingertip needle poised at her cheek, just below her right eye. The girl did not flinch. Mohiam's papery lips formed a smile. "You know of the Gom Jabbar, the high-handed enemy that kills only animals, those who behave out of instinct instead of discipline. This point is coated with metacyanide. The tiniest prick and you die." The needle remained motionless, as if frozen in air. Mohiam leaned closer to her ear. "Of the three objects before you, one is pain, another is pleasure, and the third is eternity. The sisterhood uses these things in a variety of ways and combinations. For this test, you are to select the one that is most profound to you and experience it, if you dare. There will be no other questions. This is the entire test." Without moving her head, Jessica shifted her gaze to study each item, utilizing her Bene Gesserit powers of observation, and something more, the source of which she did not know. She sensed pleasure in the pyramid, pain in the box, eternity in the sphere. She had never undergone a test like this before, and had never heard of it, though she knew of the Gom Jabbar, the legendary needle developed in ancient times. "This is the test," Reverend Mother Mohiam said. "If you fail, I will scratch you." Jessica steeled herself. "And I will die." Like a vulture, the leathery proctor hovered beside the girl, watching every flicker of eye movement, every twitch. Mohiam could not let Jessica see her own anguish and dread, but she knew she had to carry out the test. "You must not fail, my daughter." Gaius Helen Mohiam had trained Jessica since her youth, But the girl did not know her heritage, did not know her importance to the sisterhood's breeding program. She did not know that Mohiam was her mother. Beside her, Jessica had turned ashen with concentration. Sweat sparkled on her smooth forehead. Mohiam studied the patterns on the geometric shapes, saw that the girl still had several levels to go within her mind.
"Please, child, you must survive. I cannot do this again. I am too old."
Her first daughter by the Baron had been weak and defective. Following a terrible prophetic dream, Mohiam had killed the infant herself. It had been a true vision, Mohiam was certain. She saw her place at the culmination of the sisterhood's millennia-long breeding program. But she also learned, through startling prescience, that the Imperium would suffer great pain and death, with planets burned, a near-total genocide, if the breeding scheme were to go awry, if the wrong child were born in the next generation. Mohiam had already murdered one of her daughters, and she was willing to sacrifice Jessica too, if necessary. Better to kill her than to allow another terrible jihad to occur. The poisoned silver needle hovered a hairbreadth from Jessica's creamy skin. The girl trembled. Jessica concentrated with all her might, staring ahead but seeing only words in her mind. The litany against fear. "I must not fear. Fear is the mind killer. Fear is the little death that brings total obliteration." As she took a calming breath, she wondered, "Which do I choose? The wrong decision and I die." She realized she had to go deeper, and in an epiphany, saw how the three geometric objects were positioned in the human journey. The pain of birth, the pleasure of a life well lived, the eternity of death. She was to select the most profound, Mohiam had said. But only one? How could she start anywhere but the beginning? Pain first. "I see you have chosen," Mohiam said, watching the girl's right hand lift. Cautiously, Jessica inserted her hand into the green cube, through the hole in one side of it. Instantly, she felt her skin burning, scorching, her bones filling with lava. Her fingernails were flaking off one by one, peeled away by the ferocious heat. She had never in her life even imagined such agony. And it continued to build. "I will face my fear and allow it to pass over me and through me." With a supreme effort, she resigned herself to living without her hand, blocked off the nerves. She would do it if she must. But then logic imposed itself, even with the agony. She could not recall seeing stump-wristed sisters in the halls of the mother school. And if all acolytes were required to face tests such as this, "When the fear has passed, there will be nothing." A distant, analytical part of her brain realized that she did not smell cooking flesh either, did not see wisps of gray smoke, did not hear the crackle and pop of sizzling fat in the meat of her hand. "Only I will remain." Fighting for control of her nerves, Jessica shut off the pain. From her wrist to her elbow, she felt only cold numbness. Her hand no longer existed. The agony no longer existed. Deeper, deeper. Moments later, she had no physical form whatsoever, having separated herself entirely from her body. Out of the hole in the green box came a mist, like incense.
"Good, good," Mohiam whispered.
The mist, a manifestation of Jessica's awareness, floated into a hole of a different shape, the entrance to the Red Pyramid. Now a jolt of pleasure suffused her, intensely stimulating but so shocking that she could hardly bear it. She had gone from one extreme to another. She trembled, then flowed and surged, like the ascension of a tsunami on a vast sea. Higher and higher the great wave mounted, crested. But the mist of her awareness, after riding the top of a powerful wave, suddenly cascaded down it, tumbling away, falling. The images vanished, and Jessica felt the thin fabric shoes on her feet, a clammy, sweating sensation of skin against material, and the hardness of the floor beneath. Her right hand, she still couldn't feel it, and couldn't see it either, or even a stump at the wrist, for only her eyes were able to move. Glancing to the right, she saw the poisoned needle hovering at her cheek, the deadly Gom Jabbar with the golden sphere of eternity visible beyond. Mohiam held firm, and Jessica centered her vision on the sharp silver tip, the glinting central point of the universe poised like a distant star. A prick of the needle and Jessica would enter the sphere of eternity, in mind and body. There would be no return. The girl felt no pain or pleasure now, only a numbed stillness as she hovered on the precipice of a decision. A realization came to her. I am nothing. Pain, pleasure, eternity, all interest me, Jessica murmured at last, as if from a great distance. For what is one without the others? Mohiam saw that the girl had passed the crisis, survived the test. An animal would not have been able to comprehend such intangibles. Jessica sagged, visibly shaken. The poisoned needle withdrew. For Jessica, the ordeal was over quite suddenly. All of it had been imagined, the pain, the pleasure, the nothingness. All accomplished through Bene Gesserit mind control, the tremendous ability of the sisterhood to direct another person's thoughts and actions. A test. Had her hand really gone into the green cube? Had she become a mist? Intellectually, she didn't think so. But when she flexed the fingers of her hand, they were stiff and sore. Her robe smelling of musty perspiration, Mohiam trembled, then regained her composure. She gave Jessica the briefest hug, and then her demeanor became formal again. Welcome to the sisterhood, human. I fought in great wars to defend the Imperium, and slew many men in the Emperor's name. I attended Landsrad functions. I toured the continents of Caladan. I managed all the tedious business matters required to run a great house. And still, the best of times were those I spent with my son. Duke Paulus Atreides. When the ducal wingboat cast off from the docks and moved out into the sea, Leto stood at the bow and turned back to gaze at the ancient edifice of Castle Caladan, where House Atreides had ruled for 26 generations. He could not recognize faces in the high windows, but he saw a small silhouette on a high balcony, Kylea. Despite her resistance to him taking young Victor, not yet 2½, on this trip, she had indeed come to see them off in her silent way.